You must have seen on the news and probably heard on AM the turbulence on the streets of Jakarta last night, which left one man dead, a mid-morning cabinet meeting, a press conference, a middle-of-the-night press conference by President Widodo, an enormous sense of anxiety with possibly 18 to 20,000 police and TNI army deployed to try to keep things under control. And this, of course, is ahead of this historic visit by President Joko Widodo to Australia. He's expected to leave tomorrow night, but I wonder, I'll be checking with my guests as to whether that is likely to happen, to address a joint sitting of Parliament here on Monday. Now, conservative Muslim groups are behind a lot of this, it would seem, and they're calling for the governor, Basuki Tahaja Panama, otherwise known as Ahok, to be charged with blasphemy. And more radical elements in Indonesia and indeed in Syria have been actively urging violence against the man in the name of Islam, which is something I think the president referred to overnight, that he did feel there were political activists involved. Ahok is of Chinese descent. He's a Christian, and in the natural order of Indonesian politics, according to my next guests, he would not normally be in office. He succeeded Joko Widodo in the role after the now president announced his successful run for the post. And by most accounts, Ahok has forced through many city improvements and is ahead in the polls for next year's elections. So what is at stake here? Well, joining us now are Dina Afrianti, a researcher at the Institute for Religion, Politics and Society at the Australian Catholic University, and the editor of Studia Islamica, an Indonesian journal for Southeast Asian Islam. Also with us is Associate Professor Greg Feely from the Coral Bell School of Asia Pacific Affairs at the ANU. They've both contributed to a new book edited by Professor Tim Lindsay. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning, Geraldine.
Greg, what are you making of these events still unfolding as a result of that rally yesterday?
The rally was, for the most part, reasonably orderly. And given how many people were on the streets, it was many tens of thousands, it might have been more than six figures. And also given the kind of highly inflammatory rhetoric from some of the more militant Islamist groups a week or so ago, I think there can be some relief on the part of the Indonesian government that there wasn't more violence. There were really two incidents of violence at the end of the day when most of the people involved in the rally were heading home. And I think it's fair to say that those two incidents, one of them near the presidential palace, another one in North Jakarta, were probably involved some of the more militant elements that were at the core of the rally. But most of the people there behaved well. They accepted the refusal of the palace to allow their leaders to meet Jokowi. And
he had to ask them, though, to let him into the palace. I mean, initially, I don't think he could get in there.
That's right. He went to the main airport, which is quite a few kilometres outside Jakarta's borders, and he had difficulty getting back because there were just so many people on the streets. But I think that was all very deliberately planned. The vice president and a number of other senior leaders offered themselves to meet the leadership of the demonstration, and in the end, that wasn't that offer was also refused because the demonstration leaders said they only wanted to meet with President Joko Widodo.
Okay, and just before I come to you, Dina, some of the analysis I've seen said that there was also, you had the army, the TNI and the police. Of course, we have massively, Australians have massively sort of boosted that police competency, that you had little rivalries between those two groups there too. And so this was, and you saw the picture of both heads of different organisations, which was just very interesting to see, Greg.
Yes. So one of the tactics of some of the Islamist groups was to try and play off the army against the police. And so, again, we need to go back a couple of weeks. A lot of the public discussion about the rally changed a lot in the last week. The government was very slow to respond to what was looming as quite a severe threat to public order. And so several weeks ago, the Islamist leaders started talking about the possibility that the police would be repressive, that the police may fire upon Muslims. And we had some really quite senior leaders saying, if a single drop of Muslim blood is spilt, well, then there'll be a massive riot. And then they said they would turn to the army to intervene to make sure that the Islamic community was protected. So it was really quite a manipulative strategy. And unfortunately, some army leaders chose to attend a press conference where these kinds of things were said, and they didn't really reject them. So that allowed the position, that allowed the view to spread that the army and the police might be on opposite sides on this. In the last week, again, because of the government's intervention on this matter, the military and police leadership attended the press conferences together, spoke as one, and so it was always the case that the police were going to be in the front line, that they weren't going to be armed, they weren't going to be repressive. In fact, some of the sections of the police, in fact, appeared in prayer garments, you know, with scarves and things like that, with white skull caps on, and were going to recite the 99 names of God. So these things were all intended to reach out to the protesters and to have a calming effect.
Dina, were you very worried about this rally, and how do you feel now?
Actually, yesterday I wasn't, until yesterday I wasn't very worried, because we've seen this episode before as well. Like, I think since 1998 there was also FBI, you know, and also Muslim extremists at the final stage of the reform movement. And then also when Megawati was about to become the president, and then just in 2008. And then also a couple of weeks ago, there was also a big demonstration. But of course, as it turns out, it was so big as I saw it last night. And then, in fact, this morning I read the news that some of this crowd are sleeping in front of the House of the Parliament in the southern part of the Jakarta, in Senayan. And Habib Rizik, the leader of the FBI, actually said to all of them that they will rest for a few hours, and then after the Subuh prayer, they will start the oration again, and then we'll start to, you know, do what they are doing yesterday. So
it's not, yes, it's not morning, necessarily, yes, over, you're saying?
So this morning, as I read the news and then also what happened last night, I'm actually very worried and actually very angry as well.
Why are you angry?
Because I don't know. Like, I mean, I begin to reflect, like, is this something to do with, you know, with letting all this conservative movement taking over the public space from the discourse on almost every issues? They were like dominating the public discourse.
So you think there's been a vacuum? You feel that the government has not stepped up, which is exactly,
yes,
Sydney Jones, the respected analyst, her point of view.
Yes. I think Greg also mentioned before that the government response has been quite slow until a few days ago, you know, after Jokowi finally called the Muslim leaders to, you know, to discuss and then talk with them. And I find it also quite funny that the demonstration actually, some of them said that they want President to invite Habib Rizik to talk with him, which is to me like, I know even the young Muhammadiyah leader, for example, when he was at that meeting also with Jokowi and the NU and Muhammadiyah leader at the palace, he was saying to Jokowi that Jokowi should also invite Habib Rizik instead of just the, you know, established Muslim organization, which I find it quite like, why Jokowi would? But probably that's also what they've been, you know,
to be taken seriously. I mean, that is that would be a very interesting, because I mean the traditional attitude to Rizik has been to sideline him, to absolutely quarantine him, and to never to give them a respect. I mean, Greg Feely, just because I'm looking at 4 minutes to go, it's all about, directly speaking, this man who's standing for governor of Jakarta, who is governor of Jakarta. No, he's vice governor. He's standing to be governor. He's Christian and of Chinese descent. Is that at the heart of the matter here?
That's. I think this is a great deal to do with politics. In fact, I think there are two dynamics here. One is the political element, and that is that there are a lot of people in sections of the Muslim community who have a direct political interest in trying to delegitimise and trying to vilify Ahok. And the other matter is the opportunism of people like Habib Rizik, who leads this Islamic Defenders Front. These are people who seize every opportunity to mobilise, to raise their profile in public. So anything that is seen as something that is an attack on Islam or which is ridiculing Islam is something that they will use. And so the notion that Habib Rizik, who leads an organisation, the Islamic Defenders Front, that for the most part is on the fringes of the Islamic community, the notion that he would demand to meet the president, that the president should in fact make himself available for that meeting, that would only arise if you have issues such as has happened in the last few weeks in Jakarta. So events actually give him oxygen.
Yes, we should just contextualise that Ahok made this very interesting in a speech. He is the governor. He's going for re-election. In a speech to a group of city officials, said essentially, look, don't be so conscious that you're being the Quranic verse, Surat Al-Maida 51, is being correctly interpreted. It's your personal right to interpret it yourself. Follow your conscience. You don't have to vote for me, but in effect, follow your conscience. Now, that was, and Sidney Jones said these comments were unquestionably arrogant and provocative, and he subsequently apologised. But does this, a lot of people listening would say, well, why shouldn't he say that?
Indeed, that's one of the themes of the people who've been defending him, and there are plenty of Muslim leaders who've been defending Ahok. And it's fairly clear there was a mistake made in the early transcript of this speech that he gave on the hustings, and the transcript left out a key word. And in effect, he was saying to his audience that they had been lied to about the use of this verse in the Quran. And in actual fact, the transcript indicated that he said that the verse was lying to them about the situation, that a non-Muslim cannot govern Muslims. And so the person who made the transcript has since admitted his error, admitted it on national television, but this has a life of its own. I think a lot of people who look closely at this do not believe that Ahok is guilty of blasphemy, and therefore they believe the police investigate. Well, then this has been a case of mistranscription of his speech. But nonetheless, Ahok, one of the problems he has is that he's been extremely abrasive in his public comments, and this has tended to underscore a lot of stereotypes that the Muslim community has about Chinese Christians,
and Greg,
he seemed to be an extreme example of that.
I hate to do this, but I'm afraid we're going to have to go. So much to talk about. I want to thank you, Greg Feely.
A pleasure.
And Dr. Dina Afrianty from the Australian Catholic University. Thank you very much. And I know that ABC News will be covering this in great detail, so do stay with it.